So what do you think? What do you think about Nehemiah? You got four friendly invitations to get together. And of course, Sanballat doesn't say let's do lunch, but that's the idea. What do you think about that? He turned him down five times, actually, all together. Is that rude or what? By the way, next week will be our last lesson in this series. It'll be on chapter 8 in case you're willing to read ahead. It's really rich and good and appropriate for all Christians. So if you would, read chapter 8 for next week. Today is chapter 6. Let's do lunch, or four ways to kill Nehemiah. So what do you think? So there's only probably a few of you, maybe a half a dozen or so that qualify, but let's say some of you have a nemesis that has threatened to kill you any chance they get, sneakily or overtly or covertly, and they've just, everything they've ever done towards you has been with animosity, hatred, and they would love to kill you, and they say, I've had a change of heart. Samuel, let's do lunch. You gonna go? Because that's what's happening with Nehemiah. These aren't nice people. Even though Nehemiah has never harmed them or threatened them, the same isn't true on their behalf. So 2 weeks ago, we looked at the idea that there were enemies outside the wall. Well, they haven't gone away. The wall has gotten taller. In fact, from our reading, we see that the wall is full height. It does have some holes in it, though. It's all the way to the top, but it has 10 holes by my count. There are 10 gates in this wall, openings for anybody to go in and out of, but much easier to defend than when the wall was half its height. Then the enemy could attack from anywhere they wanted, and they were threatening to, if you remember. Now it's all the way up. They're going to have a tough time. The only place they can attack through are the gates, and that wouldn't be too smart because they're going to lose a lot of people. Maybe they'd succeed, maybe they wouldn't, but they're going to lose a lot of people if they have to focus their entryway into these gates. And by the way, there are pictures now of some of Nehemiah's wall. Two different archaeologists have claimed they've found parts of the wall, and one lady's name, archaeologist Dr. Eilat Mazar, I think that's how you pronounce her name, she found part of the wall and pottery and seals and all kinds of things that dated to the time of Nehemiah. And earlier I'd read that the wall was about 9 feet thick. Well, she discovered this 2007, just in case you want to look for it. Even has a picture of the wall, but it's 15 feet wide. So more massive than I thought. So I'm about, from me to the wall here is about 9 feet right there. So the wall made out of stones is about this far away, really tough to knock down. Just in a massive wall, and you can see a picture of that. And if you can't find it, let me know if you want to find it, and I will help you out. So we're looking at Nehemiah, his leadership, his godliness, his faith, and his enemies. So we're going to look at four sections, chapter 6, all of them. I'm not going to use all the scriptures, so it might be a good idea to have your Bible open to Nehemiah 6 to make sure that we're getting this right. But the first section is, let's do lunch and put an end to Nehemiah. Verses 5 through 9, Nehemiah's out of options. We've got him now. I mean, these guys, they're masters at scheming. They're masters at strategy, and it's just impressive the positions they are putting Nehemiah in. The next section, 10 through 14, is Nehemiah's faith is used against him. That's his strong point. Our whole series is called Experience Isn't Necessary, Faith Is. And this man started out as a cupbearer, and the king made him a governor and an effective one because of his faith and trust in God. So his faith is now going to be used against him. And the last section is the wall is completed. God is glorified. We'll look at each one of these in a little bit of detail as we move through. So here we are in verses 1 through 4. So Jerusalem is rebuilding the walls, and here's the situation. Nehemiah is succeeding. The wall is complete up to its full height and full thickness, except for the gates, which will happen a little bit later. But he's succeeding. Now the enemies are in trouble. They wanted to stop this, but it blew them away, as we'll see near the end of the chapter. They had no idea that the work could go so fast because God was behind it. Now they've got to act. They've got to stop it before Jerusalem is completely protected, although God is their real protection. They're not believers at this point. So they've got to do something. So what they do is they send Nehemiah 4 friendly letters. Hey, let's do lunch. And they don't mention food. But the idea is something like this. Hey, Nehemiah, listen, we've had our differences, you know, and we're not trying to pretend. We've been against you building the wall, but you succeeded in spite of our efforts. We all live in the same general area. Hey, we've got to live together. Let's figure out how. Why don't we meet? Would you be willing to meet us in the plain of Ono? And let's work out our differences. Let's become friends. Let's just see what we can do to live together in peace. Of course, that's not their motive, but that's what they're telling Nehemiah. So what's his response to meeting in Ono? Oh, no, exactly. Oh, no, no chance, not going to happen. Well, that seems a little rude, doesn't it? They're holding out the olive branch. You ever have somebody hold out the olive branch to you and you turn it down in faith? We're to be peacemakers, we'll get to, and we're to love our enemies, and we're to reconcile with people. And so Nehemiah says, oh no, not going to happen. I don't know. There might be 3 or 4 commentaries at home on Nehemiah. Don't always use them, but what struck me was this. All the commentaries that I looked at, they said the reason Nehemiah, I don't even get this, they said the reason Nehemiah didn't meet with Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom, those are 3 of the governors that are wanting to kill him. The reason he didn't meet him, because he was a man of priority. And he wasn't going to let distractions get in his way. It would take about a day to get to the place they wanted to meet. And Nehemiah's in charge of the building. And then probably a day of meetings. And then a day, 3 days where the work would stop. And they're right in these commentaries that we want to have our priorities right. God teaches us priorities, doesn't he? Matthew 6, put the kingdom first above everything else. You put it first and everything else that you need will be added to you. Jesus said, you need to have priorities. The greatest commandment of all, by far, to love God, all your heart, mind, and soul above everything else, life, loved ones, love your neighbors, yourself. The Bible's full of priorities, so they're not, the idea is okay, but they're saying the reason Nehemiah said, oh no, because he didn't want the work to stop, and although he responded, I'm doing the great work, should I stop it? It's a question to them. And he is not a man that typically gets in your face, but that wasn't the main reason. Nehemiah says this, they were planning to harm me. That's why. Think it through. Here, so, well, let me stick with my notes. We'll do better that way. they were planning to harm Nehemiah right now. Well, did they really want to meet to reconcile? Because if they did, and they weren't busy like Nehemiah, why didn't they say, hey, we'll come without our army. How about if we meet you in Jerusalem? Could we have a couple hours of your time? If they really wanted to reconcile. But they didn't. And we'll see that. We'll see some of the motives as we go on. Just think about it. Nehemiah is the king's governor. If they kill him, and they want to, and they're trying real hard, we're going to see four attempts at killing Nehemiah today. If they kill him, and King Artaxerxes finds out about it, what happens to them? They won't live long. This is the king's representative to increase taxes, to keep the people happy, you know, all those kind of things. So how would they harm him? Well, they're asking him to travel for a day. So picture this. Here they are waiting. Here they are waiting for Nehemiah. And it just so happens they hired mercenaries or some of their own soldiers to ambush Nehemiah on his way to the meeting. So they kill him, and they're waiting. Huh? Where's Nehemiah? So they go look for him. They find Nehemiah dead. Oh, what a surprise. They write to King Artaxerxes, we just sadly want to report to you, oh, your majesty, that we wanted to meet with Nehemiah, and we waited, and he didn't show, so we looked, and he's dead. Some marauders killed him. What a great alibi. What a great alibi. Maybe they would have waited till he got there, but there'd be no need to. They could ambush him, look innocent. King couldn't hold them to blame, this kind of thing. But they wanted to harm him. Well, what about this? What about, is Nehemiah violating Matthew 5:44, where Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you? Is he in violation of that command right there, to love your enemies? Well, let's just look at some Bible principles here. In Nehemiah 4:11, our enemies said, this is the governors, Sanballat, Tobiah, Gershom, and others, they will not know, Nehemiah and the Jews, they will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to their work. When the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, Bible says, let every fact be confirmed by the mouth of two or three witnesses. The enemies are so engrossed in trying to kill Nehemiah. It's such a big goal of theirs. Everybody knows it. It's common knowledge. 10 different times witnesses came and said, we heard them talking. They talked to their army, the people, the Jews that lived near them. He's trying to kill you. They're trying to kill you. So we know this about these enemies that want to have lunch. Again, my words. So consider what David wrote in Psalm 5:8. Lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness because of my enemies. This section of the psalm has to do with the people that are trying to harm David. Lead me because of my enemies. Make your way straight before me. Show me how to go, Lord. For there is no truth in their mouth. When these people speak, David's enemies, nothing is true. Nothing can be trusted. Because people who don't love God, have you noticed? If there is no God, there is no right or wrong. There's no rule giver. We can make up our own rules. And I think you see that a lot in politics. And I don't believe the two sides are equal. I don't care which side of the column you're on. I watch certain people that lie as though it's breathing. It's easy if you check out what they say. They just, no regard for the truth whatsoever. They get caught, no biggie. Because the media doesn't do anything. But some people have no regard for the truth, and the enemies of God's people don't have. They don't have regard for the truth. Also, it says, their inmost self is destruction. That's not a good way to be saved. I mean, a good way to be described. How would you like to be? Yeah. Julie or Sandy or Bill or Don. Yeah, their innermost self is destruction. Now, this is telling you the kind of heart that David is dealing with, the kind of heart that Nehemiah has to deal with as well. He says, the throes an open grave. The idea is this, when you have an open grave, with a dead body in it. That's what an open grave is. There's a stench. It smells terrible and full of death. And that's the kind of people David is dealing with, and Nehemiah as well. And they flatter with the tongue just means whatever they say is insincere. They just say it to get what they want. It's a form of manipulation. So Nehemiah is dealing with some very wicked people that are against God all the way. And if you, so we say, well, is he violating love your enemy? You know, there's a truth out there that if you play with a cobra, you're going to get a swollen hand. If your enemy is shooting at you, don't stand in front of him. Don't get close. These are just principles you see in the Bible. The man who wrote the psalm prayed for his enemies, as God tells him to, and it was sincerity. He even wept over some of his enemies, like Saul, who tried to kill him for years. David prayed for his enemies, but he ran with all of his might for more than 2 years because Saul, King Saul, wanted to kill David. God didn't expect David to stand there and say, can't touch me, or let's, okay, I'll have lunch with you. He ran, and when another Saul in the New Testament is the greatest persecutor of the church we've ever seen, is killing and torturing and throwing Christians into prison, what did the church do with God's approval? They ran, right? They ran and spread the gospel as they read. So the idea is Nehemiah violating the command to love your neighbor? Not at all. He's kind, never threatened them, never went out of his way to harm them, but he's using wisdom here. How about this one? Blessed are the peacemakers. That's another one where it says, for they are the sons of God, Matthew 5:9. Is he violating that? Well, the idea is still the same. I want to share this with you because you will be torn if you're a peacemaker, and you are. There'll be times when you say, should I reconcile? And 99.9% of the time, the answer is yes. Yes. Make peace, because they're probably not trying to kill you. But there are a few times when they are. Hopefully you'll never experience that. And God wants us to use wisdom. Here's the words of Jesus. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. What do wolves do to sheep? They devour them, they kill them, they slaughter them. And Jesus, that's what I'm doing with you, Cricket and Lee. I've sent you out. You've been a Christian a while. I've sent you out, and the people that you mingle with are wolves. They're not godly. They have different values than you do. They don't honor the King in heaven. So as I'm sending you out in a very dangerous world, our kids need to know that. Not in fear. I didn't go out of my way to tell my 6-year-olds and 8-year-olds, look out. But the point is that they mature. You say you need to be wise. That's what Jesus is saying. In fact, Jesus says, I'm sending you out there, so be wise as serpents. Understand your enemy. Know what their tactics are. Look at them closely. Anticipate what they might do. Think it through. Don't put yourself in a terrible position in case they're one of the people like these enemies are that might harm you. But be as innocent doves, shrewd as serpents. Don't be stupid. Use wisdom. What good can come from whatever my enemy offers me? Is there some good? Can we reconcile? Is it in a safe place? Yeah, go for reconciliation, but don't be stupid. On the other hand, be as innocent as doves. Always, always love your enemy, treat them with kindness, set the godly example, be innocent as a dove. So as we said 2 weeks ago, our enemies don't use the same weapons that we do. Murder or murder of one's character or lying or all the other tactics that they have, they don't use the same weapons and they don't play by the same rules. Understand that. Ours are more powerful. Love, truth, prayer, faith, integrity, relying on God. Ours, in the end, always win. So, moving on to the next section, verses 5-9, Nehemiah They think Nehemiah is out of options, and basically he is. He's out of options. We've got him now. Look at this strategy is impressive. Look at what they do to Nehemiah to try to get him to succumb to their wishes. Such a great chess move by his enemies. They sent him, the first section we read, they sent four letters to Nehemiah, but they were sealed. They had wax or the clay seal on there with a stamp, and no one could read them until it got to the governor, and he could share it if he wanted to, but four letters, meet with this. But now they're turning up the heat. Now they sent an open letter, which means it was available for anyone to read, and the enemies wanted everybody to read it. They wanted to know what the letter said. So they sent an open letter so everyone will know the contents of the letter. And so they again want him to meet with them. So they slander him. They say, you're trying to be a king. You want the wall up so you can rebel against King Artaxerxes. Right, no army. Artaxerxes rules the known world. Right, but nonetheless, they're accusing him of something that's false, that he is building the wall for his own power. So what can happen? Two things. Because it's an open letter, and all the people hear the accusation. Nehemiah is doing this to become king? We're risking our lives, and we're going to get slaughtered by Artaxerxes so Nehemiah can be king for a day? So they're wanting the people to stop working out of fear of retribution from the king. And they want Nehemiah, they tell him, Nehemiah, we read it in the reading, but not again. They tell him, we're going to report you to King Artaxerxes. We're going to tell on you. And what would be the consequence if Artaxerxes believed the report? He's going to send an army. Probably knock down the wall again, but he's certainly going to knock Nehemiah's head off if he thinks Nehemiah is trying to usurp authority and become king. So Nehemiah only has two options, and neither looks good. He can either go meet with them, and what's the consequence of meeting with them? They're going to kill him. They want to harm him, so he can do that, or... Here's the second way to, so they want to kill him. We read that in the first section. Two, now they're killing his reputation. That's what slander is. They're lying. So that's the second type of murder. Three, if he doesn't meet with them, the king will do the dirty work. He'll come and kill Nehemiah, they hope. So that doesn't look good. If he goes meet with him, he might die. If he doesn't meet with him, he might die. It's really an incredibly impressive strategy, and Nehemiah is in a bind. They're really twisting his arm. So both situations are out of Nehemiah's control, and you will be in situations where you have two choices. You've been in them, and you go, ooh, I don't like choice A. I certainly don't like choice B. What are you going to do? You say, boy, I can anticipate the consequences of both. Well, a couple of things. Nehemiah's reputation will determine the outcome of this fiasco. You know, our only son, not a perfect man, no one is, but he learned a neat lesson about reputation. Either one of his friends, he never talked much about himself when he was in school, but middle school or high school, I forget. But one of his friends or the teacher himself, Mr. DeBoer, told us what happened. Jacob's playing four square in PE class. Mr. DeBoer, pretty good guy. He says, Jacob, you cheated. He says this in front of the entire class. Not too scriptural. Supposed to take him aside in private, but Jacob, you cheated. And everybody around Jacob in unison said, no way, Mr. DeBoer, Jacob never cheats. Not a perfect young man, but a good one. There's only one reason Why, in unison, they said, not a chance. He didn't cheat. Mr. DeBoer, he doesn't. Because of his reputation, they all came to his defense. He got to see the power of that. Wow. It's good to be a man or young man of integrity and to build your reputation. And Nehemiah did just that. Remember, there were two things that the enemies wanted to happen. They wanted the people to stop working because they didn't trust Nehemiah. Isn't going to happen because Nehemiah was governor and he got dirty just like them. Nehemiah put his own hand to the work, carried the rocks, got filthy, slept in his clothes overnight like everybody else did, in his work clothes, sweaty and dirty. The only time they took him off, he says, was to wash them. He didn't take his governor's taxes for the food allowance. All the other governors taxed the people heavily for their food allowance, which was a lot of food, by the way. Nehemiah fed 150 people a day. But my point is this. He didn't tax them like he could have, like all the other governors did before him. He got dirty just like them. He showed his concern for them. He would say, be calm. The Lord is with us. Or he let them know, I'm not gonna tax you for my food allowance. And they go, wow, he cares for us. Not the actions of an arrogant, power-hungry man that wants to become king. So the people did not stop working. Number two, these enemies, they're taking a big risk because they said they're going to report Nehemiah to the king, but the king knew Nehemiah personally. Remember? Nehemiah used to be this close to him and give him his wine glass, taste it to make sure it wasn't poison. And he trusted Nehemiah so much, although he'd only been a cupbearer, he made him governor. Chances are the king is going to investigate and not run to a rash decision. And if these guys were lying about Nehemiah, king would take care of business. So they never sent the letter. Maybe they knew that Nehemiah had been the cupbearer. We don't know if they sent it or not, but nothing happened. The king was wise. Nehemiah's reputation is invaluable, as ours is. In Proverbs, I just forgot where it's at. Is it 22:1? But it says, a good name is worth more than great riches. Than great riches. Boy, it makes such a difference. With Nehemiah and you and I as well. So this one's going to play out. We'll look at this verse out of 1 Peter 2. We looked at it in class several weeks ago. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, that's what they're doing. The enemies are slandering. Nehemiah is an evildoer. And think that they slander as evildoers. They may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. Our reputation, our godliness can change the course of lives. Because just like Nehemiah, I'll bet you every person in this room above the age of 12, probably younger, has been slandered, been gossiped about, has been lied about. It's going to happen to you. You just keep doing what's right, and that's exactly what Nehemiah did. His simple responses. He wrote back to Sanballat, you made that up. It's not true. Two, he prayed to God, oh God, strengthen my hand. Always something we want to do. And he kept working and left the outcome to God. He only had two options, but he chose the right one and he left it up to God. We never see fear in him. Now, maybe he was afraid at some moment. I don't know. But the people were, Nehemiah never exhibits any fear. In fact, I'll say this too. As you read this entire book, you know, we have so many men that went before us that we'd like to be like King David, Abraham, Moses, and all the greats that I can think of, maybe not Elijah, but all the greats, almost all the time, God reveals some of their flaws, some of their sins. I've not found one in the book of Nehemiah for Nehemiah. Haven't seen. He in the beginning confesses to God, we've sinned against you, me and my father and our nation. He confesses that he has sinned, but we never see a chink in his armor. We never see a character flaw that I've caught anyway in reading the book right here. So anyway, reputation, his simple responses were trusting in God. So, new situation now. Oh, this is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant on the part of his enemies. When I entered the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was confined at home, Nehemiah has heard that Shemaiah is a prophet. So he went to the prophet's home to hear what God had to say. The enemies are trying to use Nehemiah's faith against him because prophets spoke for God. That was the idea. The prophet said this, and as we read further in the context, you'll see that the prophet is claiming these words came from God. So the prophet says, "Let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple. For they're coming to kill you, and they're coming to kill you at night." So quick detail. There's a temple complex. It has the formal temple in it. The holy place and the most holy place, those are there. But there are storage rooms and prayer rooms and meeting rooms, and it's a big complex. And the Jews, just like in Jesus' day, where did Jesus teach? In the temple, right? He cleaned out the temple, the money changers and everything like that. Jesus taught in the temple. But Jesus was not allowed by God to go into the formal temple, the inner temple, the place that only priests could go because Jesus was not of the tribe of Levi or the son of Aaron. So he couldn't go in. Nehemiah is not a Levite or a priest. You have to be a priest to go in. So coming to kill you. So Nehemiah seems surprised. You look at his response, he seems surprised. Look at his response. He starts processing. He says, Should a man like me flee? What will the people think if I run for my life and I hide in my own city that I'm in charge of? What will my followers think if I act like a coward? How will that affect them? Then he asks a more important question that saves his life. And could one such as I go into the temple? That's the formal temple, the place where they can close the doors, where only the priests are. And could one such as I go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. So he's working this through. What would the people think? Then can I go in? And he notices that Shemaiah is a prophet, all right, a false prophet. He surmises that they were hired by the enemies to get Nehemiah to sin. This saved his life. But if he would have gone into the temple, what would have happened? Well, he wanted to shut the doors, right? So there were other false prophets, if you read the rest of the book, the rest of the chapter, other false prophets. So what would happen if they went into the temple and shut the door and he's in the place he's not supposed to be? Guarantee you there were people that were going to report him. And then the enemy wouldn't have to kill Nehemiah because the people would have to kill Nehemiah. Nehemiah's own people would be required to put him to death if he went in the temple. Numbers 18:7. But you, speaking to Aaron and his sons, the priests, you and your sons with you shall attend to your priesthood for everything concerning the altar and inside the veil. And you are to perform service. I am giving you the priesthood as a bestowed service, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. This isn't a Gentile. This is anybody who's not a priest. They go into the formal temple, shall be put to death. So there's another way. So first, the first way to kill Nehemiah is meet with us, and they'll kill him along the way. Second, they assassinate his character. Third, they're hoping the king will put him to death. And lastly, the best plan of all, come on, the God told me, and you're a man of faith, follow me into the temple, let's hide. And now the people would have to kill him. Four ways to kill God's man. Boy, our enemies, just like Nehemiah's, they're not stupid. They just don't know the Lord yet. Hopefully that will change. So what saved Nehemiah? His faith. They tried to use it against him, but his knowledge of the word, because faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Romans 10, 17. So Shemaiah tells him, you go in the temple, but Nehemiah knew that God never contradicts himself, and his prophets never contradict God. So he, and since Shemaiah was telling him to sin, he knew that Shemaiah was a fake. All right, he wasn't a priest. Application, false teachers may be the greatest danger we face. I talked last week about the enemies in the gate and said that Jesus said, if we're divided, if we have enemies among us like Nehemiah did, the church will fall. Jesus said, a kingdom that's divided cannot stand, nor a house. But on an individual level, the greatest danger we face, and it's real. I hope you know that. I hope your radar is up, that there are false teachers everywhere. We're warned about it maybe more than anything else in the entire New Testament, that they're everywhere. Well, imagine a driver's ed teacher saying, don't bother reading the driver's manual. I'll teach you everything you need to know. So here are the rules I want you to memorize, he says. A red light means go. A green light means stop. Always drive in the left lane on the freeway and local roads. And wear sunglasses at night and never use your headlights. False teachers are worse than that. That may get us killed. But if we listen to false teachers and believe them and don't challenge them in a polite way, we'll lose our soul. They're a great danger to us. Won't spend a lot of time on it today. But in Revelation 2, verse 2, second part, it says to Ephesus, the church at Ephesus, you put to test those who call themselves apostles. And they are not. And you found them to be false. How do you know if I'm a false teacher? How do you know if Michael is or anyone else that teaches here? How do you know? Amen, brother. He held up his Bible. He says, you put them to the test. You listen to what God has to say. Are the two in agreement? A lot more to say on it. I won't, but they're a grave danger. We need to love our soul enough and love God enough to listen to him closely, learn what he has to say. Our last section, and then we'll close. The wall is completed, and God is glorified. In verse 15, it says that very thing. So the wall was completed on the 25th day of month of Elul in 52 days. You look at that picture that I mentioned. They only found a 100-foot section in one spot, but it's 15 feet wide, full of big rocks. And you say, whew. That was a lot of work to build just that section, much less the whole wall. Verse 16 says, when our enemies heard of it, and all the nations surrounding it saw it, they lost their confidence. Why? Confidence that they could overpower and kill the Jews. Why? Because when they looked at that wall, they didn't go, whoa, that's impressive. They didn't say that's impressive. They said, that's impossible. You cannot do that without the help of God. How did he help? I don't know. Did he give them twice the strength they normally have? Twice the stamina? Better decision making? Put that rock there, it'll fit perfectly. Put that rock there, they make the rocks lighter. All we know is that they couldn't have done it, and everybody, even the non-believers, were so impressed at the impossible. There was only one thing to conclude. They had divine help.
Amen.
So back to that last, let's see here, I'll follow my notes again. For they recognized this work had been accomplished with the help of God. That loss of confidence means they were afraid. They had no longer were bold, but afraid. What are we up against? We're fighting against divine power. And so remember back to 2 Peter 2:12. We looked at a little earlier this morning where it said, talked about keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, the non-believers, so that when they slander you, I have to paraphrase a little bit. When they slander you for being evil, that as they observe your good deeds, they will glorify God in heaven on the day of visitation. That's exactly what's happening here. They kept working. They didn't let fear stop them. They trusted God. They built the wall. And the enemies, in essence, glorified God. These are people who hated God's people. There is a God, and He's with these people. May God be glorified. It is not our goal for our enemies to be frightened. It's our goal for our enemies to come to know the loving God of heaven, who welcomes anybody to become His child. So there's also great, there's just great power in the life of a godly person who lives in faith. Some are going to see your good works and eventually glorify God. That's our lesson. So just in a nutshell, be wise when you're dealing with your enemies. Be peacemakers. Pray for them. Be wise, but don't be stupid. Be as wise or as shrewd as serpents, innocent as doves. We didn't look at Nehemiah's prayers, but he's praying through this several times. Keep praying as though everything depends upon God. Work as though everything depends upon you. And know your word. Know the word of God, because it will certainly save your soul. It may save your life like it did Nehemiah's. That's our lesson for today. If you would like to become a child of God today, now is a great time to do it. The invitation's always open, but why not now? If you have any other spiritual needs, please rise while we sing the song of invitation. Come forward if you would like to.